This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me, Darius Thomas.
All right, so I may take two or three chances to get this right, but we'll get into it. Who says that you have to live up to the expectation of others? Especially if you grow up as a tall kid and everyone thinks that you should play sports. But what if you decide to do more artistic things like graphic design? Well, that's only part of Brian Gray's story, who is now the director of creative content for the Kansas men's basketball program.
Cool. I'm good to go. What do you want? What time do you want to clap?
25. That was soft. Very, very soft.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Creative Sports Podcast. We are wrapping up our Black History Month coverage, and we have an amazing guest today who's a first-time podder, but he's a long-time listener to many pods. We have Brian Gray, who is the director of creative content for the Kansas Jayhawks men's basketball team. Brian, welcome to your first podcast.
Thank you, Darius. Thank you for having me.
So let's jump right into it. How did you get into graphic design? And kind of talk about your journey to getting where you are today.
Okay, so my start, honestly, started when I was a kid. My parents were pretty creative. My mom was always doing like side projects, side hustles. Like, she was a wedding planner, so she would also do, like, you know, the invitations and the guest favors for the table and things like that. I would just watch her like go through that creative process, and that was something that kind of stuck with me, and I kind of like took a liking to that, and she let me help out wherever I could, you know, and just let me in on that process. And that's just something I fell in love with, and I followed that, you know, that passion through high school and into college. I went to Rutgers University, so I went to Mason Gross School of the Art there, and that was an experience because you just grow as an artist. You get to be around other creative people. And during that journey, I was looking for an internship, and Rutgers Athletics was hiring a design intern, and I took that shot, and Andrew Coulihan, who is the creative director there now, took a shot on me, you know, brought me in. And from there, I just got to merge that passion for like creating stuff with like the competitive side of myself, where, you know, you're creating, but you're creating to be the best version of yourself. You're creating to be the best. And from there, man, I've just been full speed ahead working in sports. I started working. My first job out of college was at Temple University. I got hired by Morgan Siegfried. So I was there for a year working under her. And she got a new position at Kansas. So she left to come work with the Jayhawks. I stayed at Temple for another 2 years after that, got promoted to director position. You know, had some wins, had some losses, learned a lot. And It wasn't my time to make the transition to Kansas back when she left. I could have gone with her, but I decided to stay, you know, and, you know, kind of figure out my own footing on my own. And then the opportunity came later to come join her. And I like to look at it as like divine timing, because if I had gone before, you know, who knows where I'd be now. But leaving at the time that I did and deciding to join her when I did, you know, it was the perfect timing. They went, won a national championship, and I got to be a part of that experience, which is still insane to me. And it's just really just been like a whirlwind of a journey. It's like, looking back on it, it's amazing to see how far I've come from where I started to where I am now. It's still hard to believe.
Well, it's awesome. You know, not many people get a chance to experience what that's like to be around a championship team. I had the fortune of being a part of a championship run, not in basketball or football, but in men's tennis. And even that experience was great. But you work for one of the premier basketball teams in the country. And, you know, we're going to take some steps back, but while we're here, worked for the Kansas Jayhawks, one of the Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
How long did it take to sink in? Was it the championship or was it, you know, like a couple weeks on the job? Like, this is for real.
First game in Allen Fieldhouse is when it sinks in. There's just, that experience is insane. Like, even to this day, it's moving. Like, just the passion that fans have and the excitement they have. It's insane. Like, it's madness. And once you're in there and, you know, you see people doing what they need to do, and you see people, you know, making things happen and get content out, and you just kind of fall into the flow of things and you just realize, okay, I'm a part of this now and I need to do my part, and I need to fall in line. I need to, you know, make the best content I can make and help to push the brand forward. So just once you're there, you know, you're in it. Like, there's not much time to adjust because it is such a big brand. It's such, you know, a huge machine. It's always moving. So you kind of get in, you're welcomed in, and then you're rolling from there on.
All right. So back to your journey. So you went from Rutgers, some experience there, and then Temple. What was that jump in transition like? And talk about your experience of being in Philadelphia.
So I'm originally from Camden, New Jersey. That's in South Jersey. So Temple is like right across the bridge. I have family over there in North Philly. So it was home pretty much. Like, I was fortunate to find an opportunity that close to home where I can be around family after being, you know, away at college for 4 years. And that was a nice transition to be able to come back, reconnect with some friends, and then also pursue a career so close to home. It's a brand that's been, you know, in my life since I was a kid, because, you know, outside playing at my grandparents' house in North Philly, you see the Temple flags flying, you see the T on the buildings. So being able to go from that spectator position to being a part of, you know, creating for that was, again, all of this is kind of just like surreal, because like brands, like we look at brands, they're so much like larger than life. But once you get inside, you realize that it's just made up of people. And that experience is like really eye opening, because you get to meet the people behind the stuff that you see, and there's great people behind it. And just building with people and realizing that, you know, no matter how big the brand is, this doesn't move without the people behind it. And that was the biggest experience I took away from that.
So you grew up, you know, your mom's creative wedding planner. When did you know, or has it set in yet, that I can be really good at this and this is what I really want to do?
So I would say up until like my junior year in college, I was just like happy whenever I had a good idea. Like, just felt lucky to like, okay, like I got another one. Like, I have an idea. I don't know if I'll have another one next week, but I have an idea for this project. You know, we're going to execute, make it happen. And then if I find another idea, it's like, okay, like that's good too. And then another idea comes along. Okay, that's good too. And it was never something I thought that was like, this is a talent of mine. Like, I'm doing this. This is something I'm generating. It was always like, you know, okay, like I got lucky, you know, this to be able to have like, you know, an idea for some content that other people enjoy and other people like. But over time you realize like, okay, like you actually have like a talent and a vision for communicating with people and connecting with people. And that's something you have to take ownership of, and something you have to, you know, a skill you have to learn to sharpen. So interning my senior year and working around professionals and people who do it, you know, for a living, and actually like use their skills to communicate on a professional level and generate, you know, revenue, generate content for an audience who is demanding and is expecting things. You start to learn to, okay, the luck that I was having isn't luck. You know, I can tap into that. I can hone that. I can spend my time sharpening my skills and really, really, you know, step into who I am as an artist and who I am as a designer and how that helps me as a professional.
So where do you draw inspiration from as a designer? Are you looking in sports? Are you looking outside? Are you looking at movies? Where do you find that inspiration and that fire to create something?
When I first started out, I would say I was looking primarily at sports, because I was trying to, you know, fill the shoes of like a sports designer. I'm like, okay, what if I have to design, you know, a game day package? Like, how does this look from a sports designer's perspective? Like, how, what would a sports designer do in this situation? And that really kind of led me initially in kind of finding my footing. But these days I don't look to sports all that often. I spend a lot of my time, you know, watching movies, studying films and things like that, and just studying like different forms of, you know, visual communication, because that's what movies and film are. Like, you have an audience, you have a story that you're trying to tell, and you're trying to communicate with an audience. And to me, that resonates with me, because I get to, whenever I'm watching a film, I get to be the spectator. I get to be in the audience. I get to be the person consuming the content and not creating it. And that kind of helps me put myself in the shoes of, you know, the people we're creating content for. And that inspires me to, you know, how do I create a moment that makes people feel something? How do I create, you know, a feeling that connects with our audience, with our fan base? So I draw a lot of my inspiration from movies, from film, whether that's visually or, like I said, just from a storytelling perspective.
So what's a day-to-day look like working with the Jayhawks? Like, what kind of goes into it? And then, like, how do you attack every day?
Well, there's several content meetings for sure. We have two content meetings, Monday afternoon and then Thursday morning during the week. And that's kind of where we just kind of regroup, connect, and just kind of say, okay, like, you know, this is what we have coming up. You know, we do before a game day, we do a walkthrough, make sure everyone knows what they're doing, you know, has their goals in mind, and has, you know, content ready for pregame, in game, post game, things like that. But it's honestly, it's not as strict as you might think. You know, we have a group chat that's like constantly active. It never sleeps. So ideas are always flowing, and we have a great content team. Like, we have a great group of people, from designers to photographers, to videographers, to a broadcast team. And we're constantly sharing ideas and working on, you know, ways that we can do things differently, do things better, and just creating a better overall experience for our fan base and, you know, telling our athletes' stories. So it's honestly very, very relaxed in a way. Like, it's strict, obviously, because people have to get their jobs done and they do what they need to do. But there's no set schedule when I walk in the door. You know, I get to walk in, I know I have these things that I need to do, these things I need to get done. And you knock those out, and then the time you have, you get to generate ideas, you get to create content that, you know, you think might work, or experiment and things like that. So yeah, it's honestly a very open and creative environment.
And talk about the role of being the director of creative content. From, I mean, obviously basketball season starts in November, late October into November. What goes into the planning of a season, content-wise? Are you sticking to kind of a look and feel for the season? And how do you address that or approach that during the season?
Yep. So I spend maybe 2 to 3 months during the summer just developing a visual look, a visual identity, and just trying to better illustrate Kansas basketball. Because, like, I wouldn't say that I have a style or a personal style. Like, my style is Kansas. So whatever best illustrates Kansas basketball is, that's the decisions I try to make. So I spend time, you know, working on templates, trying to figure out, you know, different elements to bring in and things that help tell the story of the history of this program. And once you get that figured out, it's kind of smooth sailing from there, because you know that, okay, I have this visual language that I can go back to. So anytime I need to create content, I have this framework ready to go. And during the season, you're just constantly taking notes. Okay, like, this could be better. People didn't respond to this the way I thought they would. You're just constantly taking notes. And a lot of the time you tweak that during the season, like in real time. Like, me being a movie fan, a film fan, I look at the way like George Lucas like went back and like tweaked Star Wars. Like if the CGI wasn't right, we're going to go back and we're going to fix it. Like we're not going to wait. We're going to do it in real time. So it's this living, breathing work that's being produced. So I try to fix and tweak things as much as possible, but any drastic changes that I think would be too jarring to introduce during the season, we hold that off for the following season and then just kind of regroup and figure out what we did right, what could change, and then rebuild from there.
So how involved is everyone in the process? Are the coaches very active in the planning? Is your supervisor from the athletics department, like kind of what goes into all of that?
There, depending on the project, you know, there's various levels of involvement. We have our director of basketball ops, Coach Q, who's more so involved in the day-to-day stuff. He's in all our group chats and things like that. And he'll give us the thumbs up or the thumbs down of like, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that, or you know, this is a green light, we should go with that. So we have him as our daily kind of point of contact. But for larger projects, you know, like the schedule poster and things like that, you definitely got to run up and run up to the basketball office, talk to Coach Self, you know, get the approval from the boss. But you know, on day-to-day content, he's not going to be involved in stuff like that. So we have our executive kind of creative director who kind of oversees all of athletics, and he kind of runs point on the day-to-day stuff. But outside of that, it's mostly me kind of dictating, you know, the look of things and kind of leading projects that are basketball specific. So I work on things from like printed material to facilities branding projects to, you know, social content for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, things like that, merchandise, pretty much anything that kind of needs to be Kansas basketball branded. It's going to run through me first. And if it's not me, it'll be our graphic designer from athletics who might step in and help out.
So we all know that college athletics is a grind. It is a full-time commitment. For basketball, you're talking multiple games a week. In the beginning of the season, you may play four games if you're doing tournament. How are you finding time outside of work to kind of release from that? What are the type of things that you like to, what kind of hobbies do you have? And how are you finding time to create work-life balance?
Wow. Work-life balance. What is that? I spend, like, obviously, like anyone working in sports, you spend a lot of time, you know, either in the office or at home with your laptop, you know, just kind of making sure that things get done. But the time I do have, I try to step away from that as much as possible. Like me, like I said, like movies are one of my biggest inspirations. So I spend a lot of time at the movie theater that's not far from here. And that's kind of been like my safe haven, I guess I'd call it, because it's just me in a dark room, you know, just getting to be the spectator, like I said, and be the one in the audience and just kind of not worrying about creating any content, but actually getting to like step back and take in some content and get to, you know, just unwind. And that's been my biggest kind of relaxer, and especially working with Kansas basketball, because it is a grind, you know, day in and day out. So the time that you do get to yourself, it's important to kind of have that space that is completely untouched by work. That way you kind of, you get to go there, you get to just have this space to yourself and unwind.
What would you say, and this is going to be a hard one, what would you say are your top five movies?
My top five movies. I'd have to go, and this is in...
And they don't have to be in order.
Just, yeah, I was going to, this is no particular order, but definitely Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back. Like that's, to me, that's maybe the best Star Wars film ever made. And just like from a blockbuster standpoint, you know, like what that's done for the film industry is, we still see the results of that today. So Empire Strikes Back, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is a amazing film featuring Jim Carrey and written by Charlie Kaufman and also featuring Kate Winslet, which is like what I thought was a rom-com. So I was going into it thinking I'm going to just watch, like, you know, this rom-com might be funny. It's got Jim Carrey in it. Man, this is like the saddest movie I have ever seen in my life. But it's a beautiful film, and I always go back to it every once in a while. So that's definitely, that's got to be at the top of my list. After that, I'd go Space Jam.
The first one, or
absolutely the original, absolutely. man, that last two, that's stumping me.
I wouldn't Let's even see, make got... it through three. So I'm just glad that you had three that you could roll off your tongue, you know?
Yeah, I'll fire off some others. This may not hold up if anyone was ever to debate me on it, but let's say Sicario, the first one, which is a great movie, and Blade Runner 2049.
Awesome. So you've spent some time in the creative industry. What are some things that you've seen in the industry that are inspiring to you, and what are some things that may be disheartening to you?
I would say that the sports creative industry is very communal, and the support that I see online from other creators, just like helping each other out with, like, if someone has a question, someone steps in, we'll help them out, or just like the general like support, you know, cheering people on, kind of making them feel like, okay, like you get that validation from your peers, you know, like, hey, this is good, great job. That's amazing. Like, that you might not find that in any other industry. Like, if you were to go to work at an agency, like, that, again, that's another competitive space, but you just might not have that same kind of connection with your peers. I don't know. I've never worked in that space, but it's truly something special, the sports creative community, and just being able, like, it would vary from, you know, it might be an intern asking a question, you get a response from like a senior director, and you might have a senior director looking for something and get a response from, you know, an entry-level graphic designer or an entry-level videographer. Like, it's just, there's no gatekeeping, and I think that's a great thing, and hopefully that continues. One thing that I find disheartening is the fact that, you know, creatives aren't necessarily valued the way that they should be. Like, we've all seen it before, you know, a position that gets posted for, you know, 40K, and you do everything but damn near coach a team. So like, that's unacceptable, and that's been disheartening. But I do think that because we have such a connected space, that won't last long. Like, that's going to have to change, and I think the people that are in that community, in our community, are going to make sure that we see change in that area.
Yeah, I think that's a great point of, you know, doing everything except coach a team. And I was just having a conversation with someone the other day. The industry has, I think the thing that we oftentimes forget is that this portion of the industry is still fairly new. You know, 10 to 15 year, like, span of everything has changed. Like, when I started, you know, in 2007 or 8 or whatever as a student, the opportunities that students have now is like 20 times more than what I had. I mean, we had like two students trying to help do a lot of stuff. And so it is awesome that the industry has kind of exploded in the way that it has, but it also has created limitations for, you know, positions. Because one thing that a lot of people who are unfamiliar with the sport industry, especially in college athletics, is that those jobs aren't necessarily created by the department. They're created by campus standards and the job descriptions that are on the campus books. And so they're operating in an old space. you know, like a videographer, editor. Like that's all they know a position to be. Yep. And there's some internal fighting between athletics and Canvas, like, hey, we want to hire this. And they're like, oh, but we can't get the job description and things on the books, you know, a new technical term for 3 to 6 months. And so it's some of that. And so the thing I would like people to understand is that it's not always the school. Sometimes it is the athletic department, you know, not valuing. But a lot of that has to do with campus as well. What is your staff makeup for basketball and creative? Like, you're the director of creative content. Like, are you only doing graphics? Are you having to do video? Are you having to do motion graphics? Or do you have a team of creatives that kind of help balance what you're doing?
So I focus on design primarily. We have a team of videographers and a manager of photography and student workers that help with photography as well. And we have, like I said, a broadcast team that helps with video during games and things like that. Our athletics graphic designer works with me closely to help out with design things that I may not be able to get to. But as far as like direct like staff that I oversee, it's right now it's just me, but we have such a huge team that we're able to help each other out in tandem.
So are you, even though you're technically working with basketball in some of the other seasons, are you able to kind of dip your toe in and help out with a tennis or a football?
Absolutely.
Or baseball.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you like, and here's something else that is new in regards to a position like yours, is creatives working specifically for a team. Do you like just working with one team, or do you like the drasticness of, you know, working multiple sports?
So I've been lucky to have the experience doing both. So when I started at Temple, I was working with all 19 of the sports that they had there. And that was fun, you know, at first. And then after a while, you know, it's like, okay, I only have but so many ideas, and you got to figure out a way to you know, divide them amongst the sports that you work with. So being able to work with one sport and have like all of your ideas, all of your attention go to this one sport, I find that to be a better experience, just because it's, you know, you get a focused experience working with this team. You get, you know, get to know the athletes and their personalities, and you're not dividing your attention amongst, you know, 15, 17, 19 sports.
Yeah. So what went into the inspiration for this year's creative branding for Kansas basketball?
So I really just took in what the fans liked. Like anytime that we wore like a certain jersey, they love the circus font, the old KU circus font on the jerseys, and they would constantly be, you know, in the comments like, hey, bring back the circus font and things like that. So I, you know, went to the archives on our server, found the font, and worked it into the digital content. And I was like, you know, this is what people want to see. Why not give it to them? And that got approved, and we were able to do that, and we put it on. It's on all of our contents, on the posters. It's on, you know, the day to day stuff, the game day stuff, the graphics for Twitter and stuff like that. It's on merch. It's on T-shirts, and I think fans are happy with that. I hope they are. But just things like that, like listening to what people want. You know, a lot of times we kind of feel the need to kind of like justify our position by kind of dictating things and say, okay, I'm going to make it this way because this is how I want it to be. When that's not necessary all the time. Sometimes people will just let you know what they want, what they want to see, and it's up to us to just listen and then execute that properly.
It's interesting that you bring up that point about, you know, feedback and fans and comments. And, you know, some people would be of the nature to say, just let me create and just take what I give you.
Right.
How important is that for you to kind of buy into getting feedback. Like, obviously, you're not going to look at every single comment, but
right,
kind of getting a, you know, temperature check of like, okay, well, they like this. They've said this a couple times. Let's kind of incorporate that, or looking for that as a way to put them involved to get them involved into the creativity of their program, because the program really belongs to the fans, the school, the athletes, all of that. So how important is that for you to incorporate that?
It's definitely a balance for sure. Like, you know, we all have egos. I have my own ego, and you got to know when to listen to it and know when, okay, my ego is telling me, like, you know, I know what I'm doing in this situation. I need to believe in myself. I need to, you know, not doubt myself, and I need to do what I know I'm good at. And there's times where you have to fight to get people to say, okay, you know, sure, you go handle it. Like, you know what you're doing, you go handle it. And then there's times where you have to sit down and say, like, okay, like, this is much bigger than me. Like, I, like, this existed before I got here. It's going to exist when I'm not here. Like, you have to listen to the people who are sharing this with you. Like, I'm in a position to be able to create something and have it, you know, represent Kansas basketball. Part of that representation is making sure that other people have their opinions and their voices heard as well. It can't just be me. And I think that carries across media in general. Like, representation is important. We hear that a lot. And diversity of opinion is important as well.
And it's interesting that you brought up diversity of opinion, because I was about to bring up diversity of staff and the people around you. So as I said before, we are celebrating Black History Month. What does it mean for you to show up as a Black creative? And, you know, college basketball is one of those sports that is, you know, in a lot of, especially in like the Big 12, ACC, in the Power Five, you're going to have a lot of people who look like you, but you're able to create and they're able to see you on the other side of it. How important is that for you?
It's extremely important to me, because growing up, like, I'm 6'5", people look at me and they see an athlete, they see a basketball player. I've my whole life, you know, people ask me, hey, you play ball, you know, like, we're going to get you on the court, things like that. But that just was never my path. I was always an artist. And so being able to be on the opposite side of that is important. And for people to see me on the opposite side of that is important as well, because I think image is extremely important. And it's important for young Black children, Black creatives, Black athletes, whatever, to not just see themselves as athletes or entertainers, but there's other options, there's other avenues. So if I'm able to be a part of that image that exists outside of the two, you know, the big two, athlete or entertainer, that's important to me, because, you know, that's what I got growing up. It's like, you're an athlete, you're tall, you got to be an athlete. So being able to stand there, you know, in Allen Fieldhouse as an artist is special to me.
That is extremely, I want to say funny, but it's almost like wild that's what you get, right? Like, you're being 6'5", and people are thinking that you're only able to do a certain thing. So, like, growing up, was there any interest in, you know, playing sports, or did you play any sports? Or
so I tried, but I was not good at it. My mom was an athlete in high school. She ran track. She played basketball. So I grew up with her basketball trophies, you know, around the house and things like that. But she was also extremely encouraging, like, you know, letting me know, like, you know, you got to find your own path. You got to do your own thing. So I've always had that kind of self-confidence. So even if people looked at me like, oh, you're wasting your potential because you're not playing basketball, you're wasting your talent because you're not, you know, on a football field, I was always able to kind of just shrug that off and keep it moving. Because I, you know, having that confidence that, you know, I learned from my mom, it just helped me kind of, you know, walk my own walk. And it where it got me is one of those things, again, I was talking about before, like divine timing, being able to have a national championship ring as someone who's never played on a team. It's like, you know, that's something you got to step back and look at, like, okay, this is something that's a little bigger than me. So I get to look at that, and I get to hopefully share that with anyone who might be feeling conflicted about their place and what they need to strive for, who they need to be. The lesson I've learned in my experience is just, you know, be you and don't doubt yourself, because there's enough people throwing doubt your way. You don't need to add to that.
Absolutely. And basically, it's people were telling you that not that you are wasting anything, it's just that they were projecting what Absolutely. They thought that you should be just because you have the physical attributes. But, you know, it's not the desires of everyone to be a wide receiver or a quarterback or, you know, point guard or anything. Some people just want to create. So that's awesome that you chose your path and let your path be yours. So what does it mean to you to be a Black creator?
It's special. Like, I mean, growing up, both my parents, like I said, were into art, into being creative. Like, my dad's a huge music fan. So I learned a lot about music by listening to the stuff he listened to. And you learn about people like, you know, Quincy Jones. And then you realize, like, the impact that he's had just on things you wouldn't even realize. Like, you grow up watching The Fresh Prince. You don't get The Fresh Prince without Quincy Jones. So that's what being a Black creative means to me, is like people like that kind of have such an impact that you don't even realize it. Like, you know, it's, you don't question it. It's like air, it's like breathing, you know, they're there, and it's a part of your life. They're creating things that are a part of your life, and they've had to, you know, overcome obstacles. They have to, you know, overcome doubt and still find a way to maintain their passion and create at a high level and be successful doing it. So that's what it means to me. That's not to say I wake up every morning and try to be Quincy Jones, but I'm aware of the position I'm in. I'm aware of the impact that has, the influence it has. And I try to carry that as far as I can, as far as possible, especially growing up in Camden, New Jersey. That's not something that's expected from, you know, a young kid in Camden, you know, that again, there's doubt projected onto you. So you have to overcome that and then go even further than what people thought you could go, people thought you could go.
You've been in the industry for a bit. What is some advice that you would have to other creatives, younger creatives, aspiring youth who may be 6 foot plus, who other people are telling them to go one way, but wanting to choose their own path? What's kind of some advice that you give to people?
I think I'd echo, you know, my previous statements, and I would say definitively, don't doubt yourself ever, because like in my personal experience, I've been, you know, heading toward the locker room after a game, or working the sideline, taking photos at a football game, and had, you know, event staff or security say like, hey, stop you and say, hey, are you allowed to be there? And I'd show them the all access credential, and it's like they'd let you through, but they'd still give you a hard time. And, you know, like there's always that voice in the back of your head. It's like, well, why are you giving me a hard time? Like, would you have stopped someone else? Or like, if I didn't look the way I did, would you have given them a hard time? But you got to shrug that stuff off and keep it moving. And like I said, that's doubt. That's someone doubting that you're not who you say you are. You're not supposed to be where you say you're supposed to be. And there's so much of that thrown at you. Like, you just cannot put any of that on yourself. Like, there's just too much of it for you to bring yourself down with that. You got to learn how to navigate your way through it and still find a way to be successful. And many of people have done it for me before anyone listening to this. So I can do it. You can do it.
We talked about the national championship and the whole run to get there. Would you classify that as the best event that you've ever covered, or what are some of the things that you've really just enjoyed over your career?
Yeah, like that's a level of success that I haven't been around before. Like, that was insane. Like, we did a cereal box to commemorate it, to celebrate it, like, with one of the local grocery stores. And I got to design that, and that's insane. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know, for me as a creative person, I always thought there was like this like threshold you had to cross to become like a professional, to become like the type of person who designs cereal boxes or whatever. But there isn't. Like, you have everything that you needed all along. Like, no, there was no one there over my shoulder when I was designing the cereal box. There was no one telling me how to do it or anything like that. It was just like, you've got this project. Do you want to handle it? You want to carry it? Sure. And they let you do it. And then you get to, you know, 6 months later, walk into the grocery store and see a display of something that you've worked on. And for me, that was eye-opening, because I didn't need to wait for the Jayhawks to win a national championship for me to do something like that. Like, you've had the ability to create that all along. So I learned a lot from that experience, and just being around media at that level, you learn that, you know, again, as big as these brands are, it's people that get the wheels turning and that get things done. So it helped me grow as a professional, as a creator, for sure. But as an Eagles fan, I would say that my most enjoyable experience is Saturday mornings at Lincoln Financial Field covering Temple football games. Like, just being able to walk around that facility, walk out of the tunnel onto the field that I grew up watching, you know, games with my dad or whatever, and just being able to step onto that field with my camera and, again, as an artist, walk onto Lincoln Financial Field. It was that's special to me.
Yeah. I remember as a Cowboys fan, in 2008, I was at Ole Miss, and we played in the last Cotton Bowl at Cotton Bowl Stadium, like the actual bowl game at the stadium. And then the next year we go to Jerry's World, and it had just opened. And I walk in into the stadium for the Cotton Bowl, and it was like nostalgia, just being in a place that, and it wasn't the, you know, the old Texas Stadium, which it probably would have been even more mind blowing, because that's somewhere that I spent time like watching so many games being played there. But I just remember walking in the building and like almost in tears, just because it was like, excuse me. It was crazy, because it's like, man, like, I'm here. And it's not like, oh, you made it. It's like, no, it's like, growing up as a kid, do you even dream of these things, of being on the same field that, you know, NFL players and all that?
It seems so far out of reach. And it seems far out of reach until you get there. And then once you get there, you realize just how close it was. And again, that you've had everything you needed from the start. There's no threshold you had to cross to become a different person to get here. Like, you're here because you are who you are, and you're here on your own merit. And that kind of bridging of that gap, the merging of those two worlds, I think is a special feeling. And I think anyone, like you just said, like, anyone who has been able to have that experience can attest to that.
Now, let's shift back a little bit, because, I mean, you went to school at Rutgers. You went to Temple, as you said, you could have left a lot sooner, but decided to kind of stay in place and then made the move. What are you seeing? Like, how valuable is waiting for that divine moment, as you said? I think, you know, listen to your last comment. Sometimes we try to, you know, make our, we try to speed up our journey sometimes. Absolutely. Instead of, and I'm not saying that you got to wait somewhere 20 years to wait your turn, but a lot of times we try to go at a pace that isn't meant for us to go. So what's kind of your opinion on that and, you know, everything happening when it's supposed to happen?
I think a lot of times people are trying to move faster than they maybe need to be because they see other people, you know, moving at a certain pace or moving at a certain rate. And we're more connected now than we've ever been before. So it's very easy for people to get lost in what this person's doing over here because I saw them posting about a new job on Twitter. Like, I want a new job. Or this person got promoted. I want a promotion. Or this person's moving here. Like, I want to move. It's very, I think, if that's what you want, like, you just want new experiences, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, go wherever you want, chase it by all means. But it's very important to kind of, in my opinion, to kind of ground yourself in your story and your journey and figure out where you're going. Because if you're just hopping around just to, you know, just to do it for the clout chasing or for chasing opportunities or whatever, whether or not that opportunity is for you, you see an opportunity, you're just going to chase it because it's there. Nothing wrong with that, but you might find yourself maybe stuck after a while because you're not achieving the things that you want to achieve. You got to have personal goals that you want to achieve. And if that goal is achievable in the place that you're in, then, you know, I don't see a reason to run from that. And opportunities are always going to be there. Like, there's definitely a fear of missing out that I think is prevalent. And that's understandable, like I said, because, you know, we see it all the time. We're so connected. But the opportunities aren't going anywhere. You need to make sure that you're prepared for those opportunities by doing the work where you are. And then when those opportunities show up, you're ready to go.
How easy is it to lose track of where you are focusing on the next move?
It happens extremely easy because, you know, even if you're just looking for like inspiration on social media or whatever, you can lose yourself in that. Like, I see a lot of people kind of creating the same stuff, honestly. Like, a lot of people are creating things that look like stuff that they saw someone else do. And that person was creating something that looks like something they saw someone else do. And there's nothing wrong with inspiration. But I think when you're kind of taking in images and content at that rate, it's very easy to try to keep up with what everyone else is doing instead of kind of figuring out, okay, how can I add to this? Like, what is something that I can do from my perspective that can add to this conversation, that can add to this space, as opposed to just trying to keep up with what other people are doing? Because you're not adding anything at that point. You know, you're just kind of repeating. And to me, I think people are doing themselves a disservice by doing that, by trying to keep up instead of stepping back and saying, okay, my position where I am is different from this person at Ohio State, is different from this person at Tennessee, is different from this person at Ole Miss. So how can I take what I have in front of me and create something that's just as valuable as what these people are doing? That's, you know, the quality is just as high as what these people are doing, but isn't, you know, chasing the coattails of what they're doing. It's adding something. It's giving something that other people can be inspired by, and it's contributing. I think that's just something that comes over time. Like, it's very easy to get, you know, caught up in that chase when you're young and you just want to be a part of it. I've definitely been there. But in my time working in this industry, I've definitely learned to kind of step back and kind of be able to look downfield and kind of like quarterback the moves that I make to kind of be a lot more impactful as opposed to just being in the moment.
I love it. Well, Brian, we're so happy that you took out some time to share your story with us, and hopefully people can pick up on those nuggets that you're dropping. And we look forward to continuing to celebrate people like you. You are an inspiration in this field. You have youth, people who are, you know, your same age, people who are older, who are looking at your work and they're inspired. They love it and proud of you. So giving you your flowers here, keep doing your great work.
I appreciate that.
I can't say, you know, go Jayhawks or Rock Chalk Jayhawks because I'm in enemy territory. But we do appreciate you coming and, you know, just sharing your journey. What our goal is to spotlight creatives and give them a platform to tell their story and, you know, kind of show some love to, especially during Black History Month. I love spotlighting Black creatives that, you know, that are known, that are, you know, may not be as known, but to just give you all the flowers and recognition that you're very well deserving of. So thank you, sir.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me and for everything you do to contribute and add to our community. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.